From verses 40 to 48. You can find that on page 1048 in your church Bibles. It should be titled, Jesus Raises a Dead Girl and Heals a Sick Woman. Now when Jesus returned, a crowd welcomed him, for they were all expecting him. Then a man named Jairus, a synagogue leader, came and fell at Jesus' feet, pleading with him to come to his house, because his only daughter, a girl of about 12, was dying. As Jesus was on his way, the crowds almost crushed him. And a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. But no one could heal her. She came up behind him and touched the edge of his cloak, and immediately her bleeding stopped. "Who touched me?" Jesus asked. When they all denied it, Peter said, "Master, the people are crowding and pressing against you." But Jesus said, "Someone touched me. I know that power has gone out from me." Then the woman, seeing that she could not go unnoticed, came trembling and fell at his feet. In the presence of all the people, she told why she had touched him and how she had been instantly healed. Then he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace." This is God's word to us this morning. So throughout this month, with the exception of last week where we were off camping, I want us to look at four different examples of faith that prompts action. I think it can be quite easy to talk about faith without ever really pinning down what it actually looks like. Those of us who are Christians probably understand that when we talk about faith, we're talking about faith in Jesus, first of all. Specifically, we're talking about faith that believes that through Jesus' death and resurrection, he's enabled forgiveness for all the stuff that we've done wrong. And he gives us a chance to know God. The Apostle Paul explains it by saying that it is by grace through faith that we are saved. Basically, he's kind of saying that we can only know God and be freed from our brokenness because of what Jesus has done on the cross. We haven't earned it, but God chose to step in for us anyway. That's the grace bit in that phrase. Having faith or trusting in this is what unlocks the benefits of forgiveness, freedom, etc. But this explanation only really explains faith in quite a functional way. What does it actually look like in action? Does faith make a difference in the way that we live our lives? Does it make a difference to how you make decisions? I believe that the answer should be a huge yes. In fact, as Christians, if we find ourselves making the same decisions in our lives that we'd make if we weren't Christians, then I'd say there's a big problem that we may need to re-examine our faith over. Because part of faith in Jesus is that it takes us in a different direction to where we'd otherwise go. And the basic reason for that is because as humans, we are imperfect. We have a tendency to make bad decisions. Even the wisest, cleverest, most considered of us only can do an act as we think is best. And our knowledge can only take us so far. However, when we seek direction from God, we're seeking guidance from the one whose knowledge is endless, who always seeks the best for us, who doesn't fall into traps or make mistakes of things that might seem good in the here and now, but actually are destructive for us, who doesn't fall into temptation like we can also easily do. Wherever God leads, it's always towards freedom, towards wholeness, towards justice. And that doesn't mean that God's path can't be costly for us. For example, the fight for justice in any area of life is usually started by those who are speaking on behalf of the oppressed and who have a lot more to lose. But through Jesus, we have life. And through us, Jesus works to bring life to others. And sometimes that bit can be costly for us. So when we look at our own faith, a good question to ask is whether it shapes our decision making. Or have we accidentally cultivated a faith that's shaped around what we already think and do? As we look at a few examples this month of what faith looks like in action, my hope is that firstly, it's going to inspire us. That it'll inspire us to re-examine our own faith. That it will inspire us by seeing the power that faith can have in our lives. So that we, in turn, might be a bit more daring for God. That we might be a bit more expectant of God. And we kicked things off with Noah a couple of weeks ago. And we looked at the faith to build. Even in the face of mocking, even in the face of human wisdom and what seemed like rational thinking, who builds a boat in the middle of the desert? We read and we looked at how Noah's act of faith was to build because he stepped out in trusting God's words to be true. And this week we turn all the way into the New Testament and a story of faith that overcomes fear. I wonder if I asked each of you this morning, what are you afraid of? What the answers might be. When we look at the passage from Luke 8, we encounter a woman with blood problems. And this is one of my favourite miracles that Jesus performs in all the Gospels. Because it's one of those stories where someone who's completely on the margins of society is brought into the centre by Jesus. And there's so much depth to this story. Her healing is triggered by her faith being put into action. It reveals a courage within her that is startling when we understand the context. She's forced to confront her worst fears, but in doing so, she receives more than she expected, as Jesus not only heals her physically, but he reinstates her back into her community. So we're going to take a closer look at this passage again and see why this act of faith is so remarkable. Why this unnamed woman is still being remembered and upheld as an example of faith 2,000 years after she lived. If you look again, if you've got your Bibles open, at verse 43, you read that as Jesus was travelling, he was, as often the case, surrounded by a huge crowd. We can imagine that when he was called to Jairus to see if he could heal Jairus' daughter, Jairus would have been very well known in the community as a dog leader. People would have already known his daughter was ill. So you can imagine there was a real sense of a bit of expectation, maybe a little bit of wonder and curiosity. Can he heal her? This would be interesting. And so this huge crowd kind of swells around Jesus. And as he's moving forward, the crowd is moving around with him. And they're pushing and they're shoving and they're vying for spaces. Who can get a glimpse of Jesus? What's he doing? Can he get near enough maybe to hear him talking? What's he saying? It's to the point where we're verging on a bit of a crushing incident, it says here. And in the middle of this crowd was a woman who'd been subject to bleeding for 12 years. And we read that no one had been able to heal her. Now, this was a major problem in Jewish society. Now, of course, I have no doubt that you are all very familiar with Levitical law. No? Just in case you haven't been reading your purity laws recently in the Old Testament, let me refresh your memories. There's a reference being made here to Leviticus chapter 15. And in Leviticus 15, it makes it clear that any discharge of blood beyond a woman's monthly period causes that woman to be unclean for as long as the bleeding continues. And there were good reasons for this law. In a society with no soap or running water, potentially, very poor drainage systems, purity taboos were huge. Living in close proximity with one another meant that you had to be very careful to stop the spread of diseases. To be unclean, though, would have meant that this woman would have not been allowed to come into contact with others, because doing so, just by being in contact with them, would have made them unclean. When the blood did stop, or in her case, if it had ever stopped, she would have had to wait in quarantine for 7 days and then made a sacrificial offering in order to then be reinstated back into the community. The Jews were serious about this stuff. So with that in mind, think what it must have been like to have been bleeding not just for a few days or weeks, but for 12 years. Think about 12 years ago. What were you doing in 2007? I can tell you what I was doing. I was graduating from university in 2007. A lot has happened since then. Think about all the things that's happened in your life in the last 12 years. That's the length of time that we're talking about, that this woman was isolated, was ostracized from her community. The pause button had basically been pressed on her life. Now, we don't know how old she was, but it would have almost certainly prevented her from getting married and having children if she was anywhere near that kind of age bracket. She would have had few friends. We read that she'd spent all the money that she had on treatments, each of which had failed. And in that world, sickness was followed by poverty in a downward spiral. And usually there was very little chance of escape. So here was a woman who desperately wanted healing. She wanted restoration. She wanted to be able to press play on her life again. And she sees this glimmer of hope, Jesus. This famous teacher, healer, miracle worker, just meters away. If she could even just make the slightest touch on the back of his cloak, surely that would be enough to end this torture, to break this cycle that she has been in. And so, against all socially acceptable practice, she fights her way through the crowd. She ignores the scornful looks, the jibes, the comments telling her to stay away. You can imagine if someone pushes past her and she pushes past someone and they spot who she is, trying to recline and jump back. I've been made clean because she's unclean. Almost a bit of panic kind of rippling as she forces her way through the crowd towards Jesus, trying to go unnoticed. And so she stretches out. She just manages to get to the edge of his cloak. And the touch just lasts just a second. She's swallowed up again in the crowd. But it was enough. She can feel it. Something has changed. But to her absolute horror and embarrassment, Jesus stops in his tracks and he turns around. He must have felt it too. Can you imagine the panic spreading within her? What have I done? Have I defiled Jesus? Have I made Jesus unclean? The most famous man in Galilee. Dare she say it? Has she made God unclean? What's he going to say? What are the crowd going to do? How many people has she brushed past, barged into, bounced off of? All who are now unclean as well. She must have been terrified. To say that this was a woman with low self-confidence is putting it mildly. We talk about the problems that young girls in particular have these days around body image. Here's a first century extreme example. How self-conscious must she have been? To be known as unclean, dirty by everyone in your community. All of this makes a decision to join the crowd and reach out for Jesus all the more remarkable. Her faith had propelled her to overcome one of the biggest taboos in her culture. In spite of the overwhelming fear she must have felt. And I'm sure at times it must have felt an immobilizing fear, a paralyzing fear. But she'd managed to overcome it. And now it was causing her to confront her very worst fear of being stuck in the middle of a crowd and being identified. If you look again at verse 46, Jesus insists, "Someone's taken some power from me." It's a bit of a funny thing for Jesus to say. Power's kind of been zapped from me. We don't kind of get that, any examples anywhere else in the Gospels of this happening. And he wants to know who it is. Who has taken power from me? And disciples do what the disciples tend to do, and they kind of miss the point and they say, well, there's loads of people pushing and barging against you. Everyone's been trying to touch you. How are we going to work out which one who of all these people touching you was the one that's taken power from you? Get on with it. Let's just move on. Jairus' house is only down the road. We'll just keep going. Don't worry about it, Jesus. But Jesus presses on and is persistent. What's happening here is that Jesus wants to isolate the individual. Whereas the disciples are uninterested in individuals. They only see the crowd. And there's a fascinating situation developing here. When faced with the choice, the disciples take the easy option of just going with the crowd. Yeah, all right, that happened, but come on, there's a lot of people here, let's just get on with it. But Jesus searches for the individual. And once she comes forward, trembling with fear, two things could happen. The first one is that either her isolation is reinforced because she's rebuked for behaving out of turn, for breaking cultural taboos and purity laws. That could be one thing that happens. Or the second thing is that she's restored. The woman's faith had put her in an incredibly uncomfortable position. But it's a necessary situation for her. Because only by being isolated, by being singled out as an individual, can the full restoration then take place. Daughter, your faith has healed you, Jesus says. Salvation, restoration has come through faith. And it's not just the physical healing, but a spiritual and a social restoration. Jesus makes her one with him. By singling her out before the crowd, by kind of isolating, highlighting her in this way, then the crowd are also made aware that she has been restored, that she is now clean. It's okay now for you to be friends with her. It's okay for her to come and walk and work and live among you again. She's allowed to come from the margins into the centre. And this is the power of Jesus at work. Now this story is part of a whole Lucan journey to explain what Jesus has come to achieve. Luke wants to tell us that Jesus came to restore people fully, wholly, completely. He brings people in from the cold and into a community of others who share in that restoration. We are a community of people who share in the restoration of Jesus, the restorative work of Jesus. It doesn't mean we're perfect. It doesn't mean that we've made it. It simply means that by the grace of God, we have been saved. And that in trusting, in stepping out in faith in Jesus, we've claimed that, unlocked that for ourselves. The trigger that enables all of this is faith. Now let me be clear here, just in case there's any confusion. It's not our faith that makes us clean. It's not the faith of the woman that makes her clean. That's not what Jesus is saying or doing. What faith does is open up a door to allow the holiness of God to be released into this woman's life. The saving power of Jesus is so bound up in who he is that he can't help but respond when faith like that woman's is genuinely expressed. Jesus is so perfectly holy that even when he doesn't realize someone expressing faith in him, his power to heal is activated, is released. That's remarkable. Jesus heals people even when they're hiding behind his back. His power to make the unclean clean gives us a glimpse into what happens when we meet God. Take us, flawed, weak, marginalised people, far from the centre of perfection that God intended us to be when he created us. But when we meet with God, instead of us defiling him, instead of our dirt rubbing off on him, passing on our imperfections and our problems, or the alternative of us being destroyed because we can't simply be in the utter holiness of God's presence. If you remember back to the Old Testament, you can't stand to be in my presence. I'm so holy, so brilliant. Cover your face. Instead of that, we can be made clean. Instead of that, God just washes over the dirt, the brokenness, the sinfulness, the rebelliousness. That's the power of faith at work here. It's a faith that acts even in the face of fear because it knows that God is worth it. God is worth this risk of stepping out even though I'm scared. Even though I'm going against the cultural taboos of the day. God is worth it because God can cleanse me. God can bring healing and restoration. But it takes courage to reach out. Not everyone has that kind of courage. Sometimes voices get silenced. Take the woman beaten into submission by an abusive husband. A mentally ill old man, unable to express himself, yet no less precious to God. How are we encouraging others to reach out in faith? To allow faith to overcome our fears? Sometimes it seems to me that we think we've come so close to Jesus, so familiar with him, that we forget about the power of faith. Faith almost becomes normalized, and to an extent, in some ways, that's a good thing, but we run the risk of overlooking the power that faith can have. The ability to open us up to the working of God's Spirit. The ability to cleanse and restore us. Imagine just for a moment being part of a church that was motivated by a faith that testifies to a Jesus who makes the unclean clean. Imagine if that was the message that together we pressed home again and again and again. Faith in a Jesus who makes the unclean clean. Who takes those from the margins and puts them at the centre of God's kingdom. Instead of stressing out over little things like who's on the rota this week, or why didn't that person say hello to me this morning? What if we were inspiring people to reach out for themselves and touch the hem of Jesus' cloak? If we were to direct those on the margins towards a hope that allows them to press play on their lives again. Faith isn't a straightforward thing. It doesn't come with a detailed manual. We've got the Bible, but that's not always the easiest thing to read and to understand. Faith doesn't make everything easier. In some respects, it actually makes things harder. But faith is trusting that Jesus is unpollutable. He makes the unclean clean. Faith is what makes us choose the difficult path in spite of our biggest fears. Because we know when we choose Jesus, we choose hope. That the impossible becomes possible. That is faith. Amen.